Welcome back to another episode of City Hall Pass. I'm Kapel Lungani, counsel to the mayor of New York City. We created this forum, the first of its kind in New York City, to give you, the public, a unique window into the highest levels of our city government. We interview New York City's finest public servants and get them to open up in a way that is both deeply personal and insightful. And on its best days, we hope that our podcast is equal parts educational and inspiring. And now I want to introduce my two co-hosts today, two brilliant women who inspire me every day, Bess Chu and Kate Coughlin.
Thanks, Kapel. Happy to be here. This is Bess Chu. I'm currently Chief of Staff to the Office of the Counselor to the Mayor.
Hi, I'm Kate Coughlin, Deputy Counsel to the Mayor, and I would like to introduce a special guest host and a new voice for this episode of City Hall Pass, my colleague, Marae Jones-Kennelly.
Hi there, I'm Marae Jones-Kennelly, Associate Counsel to the Mayor and, as Kate mentioned, co-host for this incredibly special episode of City Hall Pass. I want to introduce our guest today, the President, CEO, and co-owner of the New York Giants, John Mara, and someone who I've had the pleasure of knowing for most of my life. John K. Mara is in his 30th season with the Giants. The franchise's president and CEO, he assumed the team presidency upon the passing of his father, Wellington Mara, in 2005. Mr. Mara joined the Giants in 1991 as a general counsel and later added the title of executive vice president and chief operating officer. Mr. Mara is one of the NFL's most prominent and respected owners. He serves as the chairman of the league's Management Council Executive Committee, and he played an important role in negotiating the 2011 and 2020 collective bargaining agreements with the NFLPA. He also serves on numerous other NFL committees, including the influential Competition Committee, in addition to the Health and Safety, Compensation, Workplace Diversity, and Legalized Sports Betting Committees. Mr. Mara has been affiliated with the Giants his entire life. The franchise was founded in 1925 by his grandfather, Tim Mara. Since John Mara joined the organization in an official capacity, the Giants have played in three Super Bowls, winning two. Born in New York City, Mr. Mara grew up in Westchester County. He earned his law degree from Fordham University in 1979. He specialized in labor and employment law and litigation at two different Manhattan firms. In this episode, Mr. Mara talked about what it takes to manage a $4 billion organization, his unique approach to leadership, his family's commitment to serving their community, and his love for our favorite city. We hope you enjoy, especially as I struggle against 20 plus years of conditioning and fail to avoid calling him Mr. Mara throughout.
Indeed, it gives me great pleasure to welcome the president, CEO, and co-owner of the New York Football Giants, the great John Mara, to City Hall Pass. Mr. Mara, for this boyhood fan of the Giants, today is certainly a day I will never forget. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us. I want to start by reading a couple of sentences from a speech that Frank Gifford, one of the great Giants of all time, gave when he presented your dad for enshrinement in the Pro Football Hall of Fame on June 26, 1997. He said, and I quote, "Wellington Mara and his family were a dominant presence in this league long before the sellout crowds, huge television, and multi-million dollar player contracts and Super Bowls. I know he won't like this, but I can honestly say Wellington Mara is the most honest and decent man I have ever known." Mr. Mara, what made your dad so special?
Well, I think the way he was raised by his parents, and he had very, very strong religious conviction and had a very strong belief that you have to treat other people the way you want to be treated. And that was something that he tried to impart to his kids as well. And I watched him over the years and saw how he treated people that worked here, people that he came into contact with. He derived those values from his parents, and his 11 kids have attempted to incorporate his values into our lives, sometimes successfully, sometimes maybe not quite as successfully as he did. So I think it was a combination of his upbringing and his very strong faith and convictions in what he believed in.
And Mr. Mara, I had the pleasure of knowing your dad a little bit when we were growing up. And I just remember him standing in church, and my younger brothers were always acting up, and my two parents just trying to wrangle them as much as possible. And he was always such an aid to them because he would kind of make faces and try to distract them. And I'm wondering, what is it like growing up with a father who is such a local, but also a really a national legend?
Well, I was probably the most fortunate thing that ever happened to me was having the parents that I had growing up. My parents both went to Mass every day, but they lived those values too. It wasn't just something they did for show or anything. And they try to impart those values to us. But they were very loving parents, very supportive, but firm when they had to be. And for me, he was just my father. I didn't really get the fact that he was this national figure until probably late into my teenage years and whatnot. And, you know, back then, we went through a very difficult period during the 1970s where our teams were not very good. And he was not the venerable figure that he became later in life. People were very angry at the team. And I can remember going to a game early on in Giant Stadium where he was being hung in effigy from the upper deck. So it's a very fickle business that we're in. When you're winning, people love you and they think that you're honest and have integrity and have morals. When you're losing, it turns pretty quickly. But he was always the same person in our house, always had the same values, always gave us unconditional love, and was the best father anybody could ever have.
And so tailing off of that, you also then took over for him as president at the Giants. How do you step into the shoes of someone who is so beloved?
Fortunately for me, I got to come over here. I practiced law in New York for about 12 years. And then when I came over here to the Giants in 1991, he lived for another 14 years. So I got to work alongside of him for 14 years. So I learned a lot just watching him, watching how he interacted with players, with staff, many, many conversations with him over the years. And I could never fill his shoes, but I could always try to strive to be like him. I don't think I always am successful in doing that. But having been around him so long and getting the opportunity to work alongside of him for those 14 years was invaluable to me. But the opportunity to come over here and work alongside my father was very special. And he was still the boss and made it clear that he was the boss. But eventually I got more and more responsibility and got to the point where I was running the day-to-day operations. But I remember very early on, we had a disagreement about something. There was some decision I had made that I had failed to run by him. And I remember being a little angry about it and saying, do I have to run every single decision that I make past you? And he just looked at me with kind of a smile and he said, you'll make less mistakes that way. So, you know, that was the kind of relationship that we had. It was, but as I said, as we went along, he stepped back a little bit and eventually I started running the day-to-day operations, but he was always there as a resource and was always there to let me know at the right time that he was still the boss.
In many ways, Mr. Mara, your father was your client. You're the general counsel of the Giants and you represent the Giants, but you're really representing the owner of the Giants in many ways. You sort of alluded somewhat to that relationship, but I don't think many of us could understand what it feels like to work so closely with our parents, but to also represent such a significant business at the same time. How did that dynamic play out on a day-to-day basis?
You know, it was an interesting dynamic because even though it's father-son, you're right, it was still, he in effect was my client. So it was a very different experience, I guess, than most people have. But it worked out fine because we had such a great relationship. We communicated so well every day. And oftentimes we would drive to work together or drive home together and talk about what was happening with the team. And I would give him my advice and usually he would take it, but not always. But as I said before, he never would let me forget that he was still the boss, and rightfully so. He had been around a long time and I was relatively new to the business, but I always tried to balance that, the relationship, in the sense that he not only was my father, but he was also my client. So I was always respectful, and the opportunity to work alongside of him was something that was a privilege for me and something that I'll never forget. But it is a balance that you have to tread carefully with. But again, our relationship was so good. And I had been around the team all my life as well. So it worked out pretty well. And you know, we had some success. And then when he was ready to step down, when he got ill, I kind of stepped into his shoes at that point. And here we are today.
And you talked about having been around the team your whole life. Not many people grow up with greats like Vince Lombardi sleeping on their sofa. What is one of your favorite memories of growing up around such a legendary team?
I mean, I go back to really when I'm 5, 6 years old, 7 years old, and going to training camp and sharing the same room with my father and, you know, going to practice with him and sitting in on some of the meetings, some of which I wasn't supposed to be at, but I would sneak in just to hear what was going on. But being able to go to the home games and eventually being able to go to the away games, the wins, the losses. But I think for me, the most special thing was being able to spend that time with my father, so much quality time with him, see what the team meant to him and what the players meant to him. There were great lessons that I learned. I mean, there were a lot of great memories, a lot of great players. players, being in the locker room, you know, seeing players like Gale Sayers and Dick Butkus play. And I remember one game we played a preseason game in Green Bay. And prior to the game, during warmups, I was sitting on the bench and Vince Lombardi walked over and sat down on the bench next to me. And we had a conversation for about 15 minutes during the warmups. And I didn't think too much of it at the time because I had known him because he was a close friend of my father's. And years later, I looked back on that and thought to myself how special an experience that was. We used to play in Yankee Stadium. That was long before any of you were born. And we shared the same locker room with the Yankees. And when I was very young, 8, 9, 10 years old, going into that locker room and seeing Mickey Mantle's locker, Whitey Ford's locker, Yogi Berra, Elston Howard, that was a pretty cool thing for a kid to be able to sit in Mickey Mantle's locker waiting for our game to begin. And I used to watch the games from the field when I was that age, being able to walk out through the Yankee dugout, out onto the field and watch the game from our bench, from our sideline. As a young kid, that was a pretty cool thing. It really was. And the clubhouse manager at the time, a gentleman by the name of Pete Sheehy, was the longtime clubhouse manager for the Yankees. And he would tell us stories about Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig and all the old Yankees. So as a kid, that was a pretty cool thing to be able to experience.
You just talked about Vince Lombardi. Vince Lombardi and Tom Landry were, I think, offensive and defensive coordinators at one point for the Giants. What do you remember from that time? And what leadership lessons did you learn from two of the greatest coaches of all time?
Those were two individuals, Lombardi and Landry, that I had a great deal of admiration and respect for, as did my father. I mean, they were personal friends, and they were both great leaders, and they both pushed their players to the extreme, but they also respected and cared for their players, and that was something that I thought was so important. You need to show players that you do care about them as people. They're not just employees of yours, that you actually care about them. Both Lombardi and Landry, in their own way, would do that. My father would do that as well, and I always thought that was a very important lesson.
Yeah, I mean, two very different personalities, right, in Vince Lombardi and Tom Landry. I mean, Tom Landry, I think we all remember him on the Cowboys sideline, very stoic, rarely did he show emotion.
Very true, very true. And Lombardi was much more fiery and more hot-tempered. Landry was very cool, calm, and collected all the time, but you always got the feeling that he was in control of what was going on. And as his opponent, that always made you nervous. You always felt like you started the game and you were behind already because he was so prepared and so calm and so cool. But two different personalities. And one thing that shows you is it's not just one style that you have to have that's going to work. People have different styles and they can be successful. But if they have leadership ability, if they have intelligence, and if they have the respect of their players, they're going to be successful.
We'll be right back with more from our conversation with President, CEO, and co-owner of the New York Giants, John Mara. But I want to take a second to share with our listeners that the city's vaccine reservation site is now easier to use. New Yorkers can visit nyc.gov/vax4nyc. That's nyc.gov/vax4nyc to make appointments whenever we have the supply. It's available in 10 languages and includes city sites plus other providers. I also want to remind our listeners to get tested for COVID-19. And remember, tests are free and confidential. Text COVID-TEST to 85548 or visit nyc.gov/COVID-TEST to find a convenient site near you. Or you can call the new COVID-19 hotline. Call for free advice from medical staff, quarantine guidance, emergency food, hotel rooms, mental health counseling, travel guidance, and much more. Call 212-COVID-19 from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. 7 days a week. Back to you, Capel.
A sports team is an organization filled with leaders, players who were the best on elite college teams, captains. You have some of the smartest owners in any sport. How do you lead an organization filled with what amounts to a bunch of final decision makers?
Well, I'm still trying to figure that out, to tell you the truth. That's something it's an ongoing ride and experience and whatnot. I think you need, number one, to show them that you care about them. Number two, that you're committed to building a winning culture here, a culture that will allow them to make the most of their abilities and to thrive and to be successful. And if you can give them the confidence that you're doing those things, then you have a chance to win. But not all players come in as leaders. They may have been top players at their colleges, but not all of them have leadership potential. That's kind of a rare quality. You have to have a certain number of people on the team that have those qualities, and that's often difficult to find. I mean, and we try to search for players who potentially can be leaders? Were they captains of their college teams? That's always an important quality, I think. If they were elected a captain by their teammates, that tells us something about them. But, you know, I think for me, what I try to show people is that winning is so important to me, that the team is so important to me. It's our life. It's not just some hobby or business that we show up at on Sundays. I'm here every day. I'm at practice every day. I want them to see that this is important to me. Whether we're 14-2 or 2-14, I want to win every game. I want to put the best possible product out there. And if they see that coming from the top, hopefully they get that sense that this is serious business here and we're in this to win games.
Has your leadership style changed over the years? I mean, we often hear about how players have changed over the years as the NFL has become richer and richer, as college sports has become a multi-billion dollar business and college players have become superstars. Now we even have high school students who are national superstars. Have you had to change your leadership style to adapt to the changing evolution of players and the fame they've achieved at earlier and earlier ages?
I don't think I've made dramatic changes. I try to interact with the players more now than perhaps I did years ago. I think I naturally have kind of a shy personality, but somebody told me years ago, I listened to a former player give a speech and talk about how important it is that the CEO or the owner of the team not just be some distant figure that shows up on Sundays. You got to be somebody that is there all the time and that interacts with the players. I've tried to do that more as I've gotten older, and actually I've enjoyed it. You enjoy getting to know guys and know about their backgrounds and about their families and whatnot. So I think that's probably the one thing that I've tried to change the most. You know, I'm not one for giving fiery speeches or anything like that. I just think that that's not my style, and that would be insincere, and I think players would see right through that. But they see me after games, after we've lost, and they see how much it affects me. And, you know, they've said to me, and a lot of guys said to me, look, we know you care. Believe me, we know you care. They tend to stay away from me after a loss because I have a difficult time dealing with that, especially the last few years. So that, to me, has been the biggest change. I've tried to be more interactive with players that are in the building.
Who have been the greatest influences on your leadership style?
Certainly my father. You know, there have been other people that I've admired quite a bit. I mean, Pete Rozelle, when he was the commissioner of the National Football League, I thought was such a legendary figure, somebody that I admired a great deal. And then Paul Tagliabue after him. But, you know, George Young, when he was our general manager here, had a certain style of his own also. But I think by far and away, my father was my biggest influence.
As the owner of the Giants, Mr. Mayor, you often have to engage in negotiations with players, owners, the league. How did your role as team general counsel prepare you for these tough negotiations?
Yeah, I'll tell you what, I think what helped prepare me as much as anything was my prior life as a lawyer practicing law. I practiced labor and employment law for 12 years. So I was involved in union negotiations. I was involved in a lot of employment discrimination cases where you'd have to negotiate settlements. So I think that training to me was invaluable. I thought about when I was graduating from college, my father talked to me about joining the team right away. And I just felt like I wasn't ready to do that. I didn't want to walk in the door as some 21-year-old kid, never having earned the right to be there. I wanted to go out and get some real life experience first. So I decided to go to law school and then maybe practice for a few years. That ended up being 12 years. And being able to practice labor and employment law in New York City, to me, was invaluable experience. The firm that I was at, Shea and Gould, which has long since gone out of business, was unique in the sense that we represented both union and management clients. And a lot of the work that I did were on behalf of some labor unions, the Hotel Trades Council, Local 32B, 32J of the Service Employees International Union. And being involved in negotiations and arbitrations and mediations, that was invaluable experience that I had before I walked in the door at the Giants. And I'm forever grateful that I made that decision to do that.
You played a significant role in the 2011 and 2020 collective bargaining agreement negotiations, which, as we all know, are some of the toughest negotiations in sports. You have to get all the owners to agree on one position and then negotiate with the players' union. What do you remember from those negotiations? Is there anything that sticks out in particular? Any lessons learned in particular?
Yeah, those were, you know, long, exhausting negotiations. I mean, going back to 2011, that was a long process that went on for a couple of years and involved a lockout. I mean, we locked out the players. And if you go back to the player strikes that took place in 1982 and 1987, the players struck once the season started, and that gave them a certain amount of leverage at the time. And I think management decided later on that we weren't going to allow that to happen again, that we would use the management right given to us under the federal labor laws to lock out prior to the season started. So we did that in 2011 and went through a very difficult negotiation, but ultimately came to a long-term agreement, which I think was beneficial to both sides. Same thing in this past negotiation, the contract we agreed to in March of 2020, just a year ago. The negotiations took place over a long period of time, various sites around the country, dealing with the players' executive committee, a lot of long days and nights, but, you know, we got it done. You know, you always give a little bit more than you would like to, and I'm sure they feel the same way, but we got a deal done really on the eve of the pandemic hitting this country. Just as the country was about to shut down, the players ratified the agreement. And I think it's one that'll be beneficial to both sides. But, you know, those are tough negotiations and you have to try to be patient, not lose your cool, try to listen to what the other side is saying. And I think the most important thing is knowing when there's a deal to be made. There's a time in every negotiation where you can sense that now is the time to make a deal. And maybe that's where you make your last move to try to close things out. That happened in 11 and it also happened a year ago.
So the current administration and the mayor are very focused on issues of equity. I've actually worked on some of New York City and the mayor's diversity initiatives, including issuing mayoral executive order, creating the Office of Minority and Women Business Enterprise. I know that one of the things that NFL and that you and the Giants organization has been focused on is diversity. And in particular, one of the things that I've been studying a little bit is the use of the Rooney Rule, where for all senior management positions, you need to interview at least one person who is a minority. Why is that so important to you and the Giants organization?
Yeah, it's a very important initiative. I mean, you have to look at the fact that I think it's 70% of our players are men of color, and we've been way behind the curve when it comes to diversity, I think, in the management and in the coaching field. And I think we've made a conscious effort as a league, and I know we've made a conscious effort as a team to try to be more inclusive and try to make sure that we are looking at the widest range of candidates here, because that's the way you get better as an organization. The more you expand your search, the more widespread your search is, you're going to get more talented people that way. So we've tried to make a conscious effort here of doing that. And it's just important that you hire the best possible people. And you're not going to hire the best possible people unless your search is wide enough, unless the net is wide enough. And you have to really make an effort to do that. And we are doing that here. And we've got a long ways to go, though. We're not anywhere close to where I want to be as a league or as a team. So it's an ongoing effort for us.
You also mentioned earlier that it's really important to you to interact with the players, and you've held many different roles within the Giants organization. Can you tell us a little bit about why it's been important to you to serve in these different roles before becoming the head of the organization?
Actually, I probably started working at training camp in the locker room, helping clean up the locker room, and then as a ball boy, and then as a teenager, I worked in the ticket office, then I worked in the public relations office when I was in college, so I had that experience as well. And there's a lot about this business that you just don't know and don't know what to expect. It's very important to try to serve in different roles, I think, so you understand what people's responsibilities are and what makes people tick. And so for me to start as general counsel and then gradually learn the day-to-day operations, that was invaluable to me. There's no way I could have walked in and just all of a sudden been the CEO without having those experiences. Even those experiences as a teenager and as a kid, getting to see the whole operation, what everybody does, all of that was very valuable to me. I mean, you get better through experience. If you actually learn from your experience, and hopefully I've been able to do that.
Which role has for you been the most rewarding or the most challenging?
I think now being the CEO is definitely the most challenging because the buck stops with me. And we've had four losing seasons in a row now. There's a lot of pressure on us to rebuild this team to start winning again. And I feel that pressure very much. And all the decisions that are made here eventually have to be approved by me. And that's a whole different ballgame than, you know, just being the general counsel where you're giving advice. Now you're the one that has to either make the decision or approve or disapprove whatever decisions are made. And that comes with a lot of responsibility and a lot of pressure. So that to me is by far the most challenging.
And I know you spoke a little bit earlier about being a lawyer, particularly before you joined the Giants organization. How has your legal training, including your role as general counsel, prepared you for the substantive challenges of the work, including managing crises?
I mean, that's a good question. I think practicing law, you dealt with so many different experiences and issues and clients and whatnot. And I can't tell you how many hundreds of arbitrations I did representing union clients and getting into negotiations. They are trying to get a union member his job back or negotiating some part of the union contract with management. That to me was invaluable because I was able to see it from the worker's side. It wasn't just a management experience. You just learn how to deal with people, how to read people, how to interact with people. That experience to me was so invaluable. And had I not had that and just walked in here after graduating from college or even after graduating from law school, I don't think I would have been nearly as prepared as I was when I started with the Giants in 1991. Those experiences as an attorney dealing with so many different types of issues and so many different types of clients in all different forums, being in a courtroom or at the New York State Division of Human Rights or at the American Arbitration Association. That was an invaluable experience to me.
I can guess that one of your favorite memories as a president of the team was winning the Super Bowl in 2008. I can remember skipping, of course, with the consent of my parents, school my senior year to come and watch the ticker tape parade in the city. It was actually my first time in this place that I now work, City Hall. What was it like to bring the trophy home and be a part of those parades?
You know, it's really difficult to describe how exhilarating that was to be standing on a float going through downtown Manhattan and seeing, I don't know, a few million people, I think, on the streets and having my family there as well was an experience that I'll certainly never forget. And we were fortunate enough to be able to do it in February of 2012 as well. And I desperately want to be able to do that again, believe me. And being able to watch our players enjoy that and our staff enjoy that was really an unforgettable experience, standing on the steps of City Hall and receiving the keys to the city. You know, all of that was, you know, great memories. And we need to get back there because that really is an experience that is hard to put into words. But to see that many people out on the streets and see that type of happiness and be able to watch our players enjoy the moment was something I'll certainly never forget.
You know, Mr. Mayor, following up on what Murray just said, I remember listening to Giants games as a kid living in Edison, New Jersey. When we immigrated to this country, I was just under a year old, and we didn't have a penny to our name. We didn't have a bed, but we did have a small radio that we were able to get all Giants games on very clearly. And one of my fondest memories as a child was listening to Giants games on Sunday afternoon and following the careers of players like Phil Sims and Lawrence Taylor. And frankly, never could have imagined that I'd have the honor of speaking to you. In my current job, when we go to work every day, we're working in essence as trustees for 8.6 million New Yorkers. Even though the Giants are a private business, it often feels like it's a collective trust of New York City. In the same way that we work for the government and feel that we are representing 8.6 million New Yorkers, do you feel the same way?
I do. And one of the things I learned from my father is he always responded to letters that were written to him by fans, be they positive or negative. And I try to do the same thing. I can't say that I do it 100% of the time, but I try. People do still write letters in this day and age, shockingly. And my father used to say to me, if they care enough to sit down and take time to write you a letter, the least you can do is take the time to respond to them. So I try to do that. I've found that when you do respond, they appreciate the fact that you took the time to respond. So when we're having poor seasons, I hear from the fans, and I know we represent this area, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, this whole tri-state area, and that people care very deeply about the team. And I definitely feel a responsibility to put the best product on the field that we can. And that's why the last few years have been particularly painful, because we haven't had a winning team in a while. And I'm hopeful now that we're headed in the right direction and that will change. But I feel a responsibility to the fans very deeply.
I want to thank our guest today, the president, CEO, and co-owner of the New York Giants, John Mara. The Giants are a part of the fabric of our city, and I found it fascinating to hear some of the behind-the-scenes history of this New York institution. We hope you enjoyed this conversation and look forward to talking with you soon on another episode of City Hall Pass.
This podcast is brought to you by the Office of the Counsel to the Mayor of New York City.